are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Friday, everybody. Here's to the weekend. Hope you've had a fantastic week so far. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes exactly like a candy bar. Go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. Today, we are continuing and wrapping up, actually, our network-wide series covering franchise what-ifs. We've spent the past couple of weeks, six episodes or so now, talking about what-ifs throughout Timberwolves history. The first week, we covered a lot of the mid-90s. We had Jerry Zagoda on the program, talked some mid-90s, some David Kahn era. We also talked a little bit of, within the Kevin Garnett era, the potential, you know, why did they trade Rayon for Steph Marbury on draft night, the Joe Smith contract, et cetera. And then this week we focus on the Rick Adelman era into Flip Saunders part two. So today I want to cover the Tom Thibodeau era and the very start of the Rosas era. There hasn't been a whole lot in the past year, I don't think, that really gets, would get the Wolves too off track in what Rosas has done over the past 12 months or so. But I'm going to focus mostly on Tom Thibodeau and what he did in his few years in charge of the Timberwolves. Before we do that, a quick reminder to please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right, so the easiest place to start. We already talked about on Wednesday's episode, we talked about what if the Wolves had not made the trade for Jimmy Butler with either not made it at all or what would have happened had they made the trade with Andrew Wiggins instead of Zach LaVine. I made my case for why the Wolves should have done everything in their power to trade LaVine instead of Wiggins. And I know hindsight's 20/20, but that's something that I said at the time. I definitely wrote about over at Dunking with Wolves. Of course, and I also said this the other day, we don't know if the Bulls would have accepted a trade with Wiggins. We don't know if the Wolves tried to do that or if Tibbs was still just so convinced that Wiggins was going to become an all-star caliber player that he didn't want to move him. So related to this, the next what if that I think we have to consider when it comes to Tom Thibodeau is what if, backtracking just a little from the Butler trade, what if he doesn't give Gorgui Dieng the big extension in his first fall? Remember, Tibbs gets hired in the spring of 2016, conducts the draft, has the offseason, and then hasn't really made any moves, but he extends Gorgui Dieng to the big deal in fall. I think it was on Halloween 2016. And Gorgui is a good player, is actually a starter for Thibodeau through that whole first year, starts next to Karl-Anthony Towns at the four spot, and is a solid player, but then immediately becomes a very expensive backup and third big once the Wolves signed Taj Gibson in the summer of 2017. What if he doesn't tie up cap space with Gorgui Dieng and instead lets him walk after that season? And, or, what if he doesn't give the max contract to Andrew Wiggins the following fall? Both of those moves would have been criticized at the time because they were both, I think, categorized as with a shrug and a, well, this is just what you have to do. You have to keep your players. What happens if you let them walk and they become a star somewhere else or become a competent starter for a playoff team, in Gorgui Dieng's case, somewhere else? And so the Wolves just kind of did what everyone expected them to do and ponied up contracts. There's nothing that Gorgui Dieng did to suggest he was worth that much money, but that was also the year when the cap jumped significantly, and so there was that much money available, and it was a perfect storm. There's plenty of guys who signed deals in that offseason. In fact, James Johnson's a current example on the Wolves roster of somebody who was just traded essentially straight up for Gorgui Dieng as part of a bigger deal, but that's another guy who capitalized on the rising cap that offseason and stayed with his existing team, was overpaid. And perhaps maybe even a little bit more egregious for Gorgui, as he ended up being a backup and not even a consistent starter. The way the league has moved now, Gorgie's added the 3-point shot to his game, so he's still a valuable rotation player and I think can be for a playoff team, but he's not worth the 16 or 17 million that he's getting paid now. What if the Wolves don't extend Gorgui? What if they don't extend Andrew Wiggins? What do they do with that cap space? Now, letting Wiggins walk for nothing would have been extremely dangerous and ultimately reckless. I mean, the Wolves still traded him now, and they still got D'Angelo Russell. So what happens differently? That's a really tough one to answer, but that's the first thing you have to point to when you look at the contracts handed out by Tom Thibodeau that Gerson Rosas inherited last offseason, and these two albatrosses in Wiggins' contract and Gorgui Dieng's contract. The next, and pretty closely related What If from that era in Timberwolves history, and actually right in between the Gorgui contract and the following offseason, the Wiggins extension, was the summer of 2017. Kyrie Irving requested a trade from the Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Wolves were one of four teams that run reportedly on Kyrie Irving's shortlist where he wanted to be traded. Of course, ultimately, he's traded the Boston Celtics, who weren't even one of those four teams. But at the time, he was trying to direct a trade to one of four teams. And being friends with Jimmy Butler, Butler having just gone to Minnesota, he was interested in teaming up with Butler in Minnesota. Both guys were on the same trajectory in terms of their contract. And so certainly things could have unraveled quickly had he gone to Minnesota, had the Wolves been able to acquire Kyrie Irving. But the Wolves would have certainly had one year where they would have been better than the 47 wins that they had been, that they ultimately were in the 17-18 campaign, and likely 2 years. I think it's pretty unlikely that things blow up before the end of both of those contracts. Perhaps the Wolves lose both of them in free agency and get nothing back, or maybe they are able to execute a sign-and-trade, similar to what Philadelphia did with Miami this last offseason, essentially just getting Josh Richardson for Jimmy Butler. In what was obviously a little bit of a bigger trade, but also how the Warriors got D'Angelo Russell this last offseason as well. If the Wolves had maybe been able to execute a sign and trade with one or both of those guys, it could have been a different story. But the Wolves would have had 2 years of Kyrie Irving and Jimmy Butler. They would have gotten off of Andrew Wiggins before they gave him the extension. And yes, it would have been expensive, and quite possibly it would have ended poorly. I'm still not convinced Kyrie Irving and Jimmy Butler are a perfect fit together, but I think it would work okay because Irving's a good enough shooter. Butler's a good enough defender that he could hide Kyrie Irving's deficiencies on that end of the floor. And I truly think that a Butler, Kyrie Irving, Karl-Anthony Towns big three would have easily made the Wolves a home court contender for the first round of the playoffs, probably a top three seed. Remember, they were fourth in the West in late February of the 17-18 season before Butler's knee injury, and then fell to eighth and clung, you know, had to win in game 82 to make the playoffs. But I think with Kyrie Irving, this team wins, you know, 52-53 games. I'm someone who thinks Kyrie Irving has generally been overrated. As much fun as he is to watch offensively, he detracts from your team enough defensively that I think he's a bit overrated as a star, and clearly things haven't gone outstanding in his stops since being traded from Cleveland. But he's a better player than Andrew Wiggins, and there's no question about that. Already Ricky Rubio is on his way out the door from the Timberwolves, and he had just been moved on from when this rumor came out. The Kyrie rumor wasn't until late July of that offseason. So the Timberwolves had already traded Ricky Rubio, and they had already signed Jeff Teague. So this team would have been extremely expensive, but at least the money wouldn't have been tied up in Andrew Wiggins. It would have been tied up in Kyrie Irving and Jimmy Butler both. And the Wolves would have had two solid seasons out of an all-star trio. There's no question about that. We don't know exactly what the Wolves offered to try and get Kyrie Irving. They obviously had to have involved Andrew Wiggins from a salary perspective and an asset perspective. They weren't going to trade Towns or Butler. At the time, they couldn't have traded Teague, Jamal Crawford, or Taj Gibson. They were all guys that had just signed in free agency. So they would have had to match salaries with Gorgui Dieng, Cole Aldrich at the time, Tyus Jones, maybe Nemanja Bjelica, along with Wiggins to try and get Kyrie Irving. I got to believe the Wolves did all that plus offered a pick and whatever else and just ultimately didn't have enough to get him. But if they had been able to land him, or maybe it was that they didn't want to put Wiggins in the offer and they were trying to combine all this other stuff and picks to try and get Kyrie Irving, and it just wasn't enough. We don't really know. But if the Wolves had been able to use Andrew Wiggins to get him, that would have been the absolute best thing they could have done that offseason. And hopefully that's not what happened from Tom Thibodeau's perspective. Hopefully that was just, they just didn't have enough firepower. But just imagine if the Wolves had Kyrie, Karl-Anthony Towns, and Jimmy Butler for two seasons. This team certainly makes the playoffs, likely has home court advantage, likely gets out of the first round, and definitely makes a bit of noise. And then also the Wolves would have gotten out of some of those bad contracts a little bit earlier as well. All right, we've got a few more Tom Thibodeau-related what ifs to get to here in just a second. Before we do that, wanted to talk about Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. Most recently, I had the chocolate salted caramel, and it was fantastic. I'm something like 8 for 8 on all the flavors that I've tried. Really, really good. Still, I think it probably ranks second or third for me. Mint brownies, awesome, and the chocolate coconut almond was also fantastic. Those are my top three so far. They are the perfect snack for any time of day. They're fantastic if you're health conscious, looking to indulge in a delicious treat while still losing or maintaining weight. Built Bars are protein bars that taste exactly like a candy bar. There's 16 amazing flavors. There's 8 chocolate nut flavors, 8 chocolate nut free flavors. They're covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft, they're easy to chew. They're great. Again, if you're health conscious, they're the perfect snack. If you still want something that tastes like you're eating a candy bar for a snack, but is in no way as unhealthy for you as a candy bar. They're low calorie, they're low sugar, high protein, high fiber. The mint brownie that I mentioned earlier, which is definitely in my top three, probably my top two favorite flavors so far. 15 grams of protein, only 110 calories for the mint brownie bar, 4 grams of sugar, 5 grams net carbs. Go to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your first order of Built Bars. That's promo code LOCKEDON at builtbar.com for $10 off your first order. Okay, so the Timberwolves didn't get Kyrie Irving in the summer of 2017. Fast forward 12 months, there's a few what ifs during the season. What if Jimmy Butler doesn't hurt his knee? I think the Wolves probably hang on to a top four seed and probably get out of the first round, but I don't think it's likely that they get a whole lot further. I mean, maybe Western Conference Finals, but there were some obvious issues with that team, and the team was just, even before Butler's injury, was just kind of treading water. They had peaked at like the number three seed and were had a rough week or so just prior to the All-Star break, if I remember correctly. And so I don't know that that a whole lot changes outside of getting, you know, the top four seed would have been huge. Getting out of the first round, obviously it would have been only the second playoff series, or I guess the third technically ever that the Wolves would have won, and second playoffs ever that the Wolves would have won a series within. So that would have mattered, but I don't know that, I think that's almost a given that the Wolves would have been just, you know, a few games better with Butler. I think that one's maybe a little bit less fun to kind of pull on that thread with. But outside of the Butler injury, fast forward to the following offseason when Jimmy Butler starts to make noise about wanting to be traded, and the Wolves ultimately the following November trade him to Philadelphia. They get Dario Saric, they get Robert Covington, Jared Bayless. They also send out Justin Patton. What if the Wolves take a different trade package? There were many teams that were interested. There were also reportedly teams that weren't interested because of the combination of some of Butler's injury issues, the way that he played, the fact that he was going to be due a max contract, and also, he frankly had worn out his welcome already at that point in two places, both Chicago and Minnesota. And neither, of course, is a super functional organization or was at that point in time, but there were certainly red flags. There were multiple teams interested. At the time, Houston was very interested in getting Jimmy Butler. Miami was very interested. Obviously, he ends up there anyways, a season later, I guess. But Philadelphia ends up getting Butler. What if one of the other trade packages had been accepted? I don't think Houston was a realistic landing spot because they didn't really have a centerpiece for a deal. They weren't, I really don't think that they were going to include Chris Paul as part of any trade. And I think he was just about to get his big extension as well. And so it likely would have been Eric Gordon, who was 30 at the time, and the Rockets ended up paying him way too much money. And now he's probably a top amnesty candidate, if there is an amnesty provision that ends up happening here with this new CBA coming out of the hiatus that we're currently in. So it would have been like Eric Gordon and some combination of PJ Tucker and whatever else was on the roster, and likely a first round pick, which would have not been all that great because it would have been in the late 20s. So I don't know that the Rockets were ever a serious contender just based on a lack of assets, unless they would have really gotten a third team involved to pitch in some serious assets to get it done. I think Miami was a real option, and it seemed all but done at one point. The Wolves would have gotten Josh Richardson. It's unclear exactly why it fell apart. The rumor at the time was that Tom Thibodeau was insisting that Miami either took Gorgui Dieng or found a third team to take Gorgui Dieng and his contract, and Miami thought they had a deal, and then Tibbs allegedly came back and said, oh no, you have to take Gorgui or something along those lines. And if that's what happened, then it sounds like it's something the Wolves could have gotten done. And I mean, they didn't get rid of Gorgui in the ultimate trade to Philadelphia anyways. What would have happened if the Wolves had made a trade with Miami and gotten Josh Richardson, likely one of Kelly Olynyk or maybe Goran Dragic? I think it's probably unlikely they get both Richardson and Dragic, but maybe they get Olynyk, maybe they get Hassan Whiteside, which wouldn't have been a great fit with Towns, of course. But what if they take that trade? Richardson has been a little bit disappointing for Philadelphia since they got him in the sign-in trade. Ultimately, is where Richardson went in the deal for Jimmy Butler this past offseason. But what if the Wolves get Richardson instead? Is he still on this team? Does he get the money? Does he get an extension from the Timberwolves? Or does he end up getting flipped by potentially a new front office? Remember, the Wolves got Covington and Šarić. Tibbs only got to coach him for about 2 months before he was fired, not even 2 months. And then both Covington and Šarić were traded within, you know, 9 months of Gerson Rosas taking the job in Minnesota. How different does the landscape look? Are the Wolves able to swing some of those trades? Do they even, you know, are they able to trade up in last year's draft? Do they sit at 11? Do they, are they able to land the players they got in the Covington deal this year? Would Richardson have been part of those, or would they just have kept Richardson as their shooting guard of the future and still tried to make a play for D'Angelo Russell? And basically the Wolves team looks the same now. They just have Josh Richardson instead of Malik Beasley. I think that's probably the most likely outcome. But I think at the end of the day, the Philadelphia return is probably the best return, especially given if Malik Beasley turns out to be a true third option and a starter and worth whatever contract he gets this summer, then you can look back on this and say the whole thing was success, the way that they, the package that they got in return for Butler. Because I would argue Beasley's got as high, if not a higher ceiling than Richardson, given what we've seen, his lack of offensive development over the last year. He's a better defender than Malik Beasley. There's no question about that. But I think the ceiling for Beasley remains a little bit higher than Richardson, and he's probably a better fit with this Wolves team than Richardson. So all that to say, I think we're kind of looking at a comparison between Richardson and Beasley, and then that's where you decide whether or not the Wolves made the right decision in trading Butler. Obviously, you pull on any one of these threads, and the whole thing really kind of unravels. I mean, it's such a butterfly effect going back even 2 years if the Wolves had done, you know, taken one trade over another. One other related to Tibbs. So obviously he was fired that January of 19. So just a couple months after completing the trade with the Philadelphia 76ers, what if he hadn't gotten fired before the end of the season? What if the Timberwolves had, waited until the end of the season, fired Tibbs at the end of the season and hired Rosas cold in May with no coach in the fold? Obviously Ryan Saunders was the interim head coach in 2019 from January through the end of the year in mid-April. But what if the Wolves held on to Tibbs, fired him after the season, and Rosas got to come in and hire whoever he wanted as head coach? Does he still hire Ryan Saunders? Or does he hire David Vanterpool as a head coach and make Ryan Saunders the associate head coach underneath Vanterpool instead of vice versa, which is what it is now? Saunders had the inside track on the job because he was already here. He had the established relationships with the players and because of his relationship with Glenn Taylor, perhaps first and foremost. And Rosas wanted this job. And there was this reaction when he hired Vanterpool to be the associate head coach. Remember, Vanterpool interviewed for the head coaching job and was considered the top candidate along with Saunders. The fact that he was able to, I'm sure, give Vanterpool a significant raise over what he was getting paid as an assistant and the defensive coordinator with the Portland Trailblazers to convince him to move from Portland to Minnesota for a nominal change in job title means he must have gotten a significant raise, and Rosas must have really positioned this as a fantastic opportunity. What if Saunders wasn't the interim? Does Saunders stay as the associate under Vanterpool? I think that's the most likely scenario. I don't know if there's any major difference in year one. Both these guys would have been year one head coaches. But it's fascinating to think about, is if everything was equal, would Rosas have played this the exact same way that he ultimately did, having Saunders already in the fold? My take is Vanterpool would have been head coach and Saunders would have been here as the associate head coach. And who knows if he then becomes head coach in a couple of years, if Vanterpool gets fired or maybe Saunders gets hired somewhere else. It's not crazy to say that Saunders is highly regarded around the league. If you go back just a couple of years, I found a list of hoopsrumors.com had compiled a list of young assistants from around the league who were thought highly of. They did a poll of a bunch of teams. I don't remember who did the actual poll, but it was published on Hoops Rumors. And there were 10 assistant head coaches who were thought of as the next head coaches up and coming. Vanterpool is on the list. Saunders was on the list too. That's a league-wide poll. Teams weren't allowed to vote for their own assistants. This was done by of executives in front offices, and something like 5 of the 10 guys have already become head coaches since then. And so Saunders is highly regarded around the league. So I think probably he would have been the associate for Vanterpool and would have gotten hired away eventually by another team before anything else happened, is my take on it. All right. Next up, I want to talk a couple of quick what ifs from the last 13 months or so related to Rosas and the job he's done, or I guess 12 and a half months or so. So we'll take a look at a few of those here coming up next. The 2019 NBA draft took place just over a month after Gerson Rosas was hired as the president of basketball operations in Minnesota. And headed into the draft, there was really no, the Wolves had the number 11 pick. Nobody really knew what they were going to do. There were a few perimeter players who probably would have been on the board, maybe a Tyler Hero, a couple other guys who ended up having pretty good rookie years to this point. But the Wolves, just a few hours before the draft that afternoon, traded up. They traded Dario Saric to move up five picks to number six and trade with Phoenix. My initial reaction was I didn't know that I loved it because I was a fan of Dario Saric, but then reflecting on it, realizing that the Wolves would have had to then pay Saric in a restricted free agency, either extend him that fall, pay him in restricted free agency in summer of 2020. Clearly, Saric hadn't shown enough in a few months in a Timberwolves uniform to show that he was going to be the power forward of the future. And so rather than overpay a guy like that, who still had some upside, but just not enough, it makes sense that the Wolves would have chosen to use that capital to move up in the draft and get a guy that they wanted. The rumor was that they wanted Darius Garland, and Garland was on the board at five. The Cleveland Cavaliers surprisingly took him despite already having Colin Sexton on the team, and Sexton had just finished his rookie year. So it was a genuine surprise. The rumor is that that's who Rosas wanted, but that Jarrett Culver was a close 1B to the 1A of Garland. What if the Cavs don't take Garland? What if they take Culver or somebody else and the Wolves end up with Darius Garland? Do they still pursue D'Angelo Russell as heavily as they did last offseason and try and get him in free agency, do the helicopter ride, make the whole pitch, and ultimately lose him to Golden State? But would they still have tried to sign D'Angelo Russell and just relegated Garland to a backup role, not made the deal for Shabazz Napier, or, you know, certainly probably not signed Jordan McLaughlin or whatever that they ended up doing? Do they still make that move, or is there somebody else that Rosas focuses his attention on because he potentially already has his point guard of the future in Darius Garland? Now, Garland didn't have a great rookie year, and rookie point guards typically don't play all that well. And I would argue that things have turned out for the better. They ultimately ended up with D'Angelo Russell. They have a cheap backup point guard, hopefully stays a affordable backup point guard in Jordan McLaughlin, and the all-star in Russell, and also now Jarrett Culver doesn't have to be a starting wing. If they retain Malik Beasley, they still have Josh Okogie. Culver can take another year as a backup, play three positions, essentially, you know, the one through three, guard three positions, continue to improve his shot from the field as well as the free throw line, and he's been a decent defender to this point. There's not a ton of pressure on him. So I would contend that things actually worked out in his favor. I think Culver has every bit as good of a chance of being a solid professional as Garland. And the Wolves also have, they're set at point guard now with Russell and potentially McLaughlin as a backup, or maybe they go and find somebody else if McLaughlin gets too expensive eventually to retain as a backup. But I think that this worked out for the better. I think that Rosas got lucky on that one. Also, what if the Wolves had signed D'Angelo Russell over the summer? What if they had gotten him last summer? What if he had gone to Minnesota instead of the sign and trade coming into play for the Warriors? The Wolves would have had to trade Andrew Wiggins elsewhere in order to make the requisite space on the salary cap. No idea what they would have gotten. They apparently had something lined up. Otherwise, they wouldn't have even met with Russell. Remember, there was this whole saga for like a week where it played out in less than a week, actually, but Wiggins took the Timberwolves off his social media. He took Minnesota off a couple of places, and it was, you know, nobody really knew if Rosas had talked to Wiggins. Allegedly he hadn't, and there wasn't anything in place, but everybody kind of knew that the Wolves would not have met with D'Angelo Russell had they not had something in place to move Andrew Wiggins, because there's no way that the deal could have happened. They could have given him the max otherwise. And it was also weird because did Karl-Anthony Towns talk to Wiggins? These guys had played together for 4 years and, you know, have grown up together essentially on the Timberwolves. Had those guys talked? And Towns was in on the pitch to Russell, so Wiggins knew that Towns was in on the pitch to Russell, and it just got very weird. What if this had all worked? The Wolves would have traded Wiggins to who knows where else, probably wouldn't have gotten the return that they ultimately got for him, or the Wolves wouldn't have ended up with, say, a Malik Beasley and a Juancho Hernan Gomez, even though those were different deals. if the Wolves trade Wiggins last offseason, what is it for? Is it for somebody with the upside of a Beasley? Or is it more of a salary dump where they maybe get a pick or they have to give a second and they get a first and maybe a couple of expiring contracts back for Wiggins and they would have just ended up with cap space? And that, it probably would have been fine. I'm sure Rosas would have made a good deal. But would the Wolves ultimately acquire Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernan Gomez at the trade deadline? Now, we don't know. They've each only played 14 games for the Timberwolves. And so I recognize that throughout this conversation, I'm overvaluing Malik Beasley a little bit just because we don't know what exactly he's going to be and if the Wolves will end up having to overpay him to keep him in Minnesota. But if he is what he was for the last 14 games and the Wolves give him a reasonable contract in free agency this summer, then it's easy to argue that this ended up working out in the Wolves' favor as well, that they may have actually gotten a good stroke of luck by not getting Russell initially, getting to trade Wiggins for him later. Yes, they had to give up a first-round pick, but they maybe would have had to do that anyway somewhere along the line to get rid of Wiggins' salary or to acquire some of this other talent. So I think it's likely they're in a better spot now than if they had signed D'Angelo Russell last offseason. It's impossible to know that for sure, but that's my take on it. Now, future what-ifs obviously are going to include this offseason, what the Wolves do in restricted free agency with both Beasley and Hernan Gomez, and what's the best move? Where's the line in the sand where they overpay these guys or what other teams might be willing to pay them? Those are the biggest question marks headed into the offseason, and we'll definitely talk a lot more about that. Also, the Wolves have three picks, likely in the top 33 in the draft. If the season were to end today, that would be the case. They would have 14% chance at the top pick, roughly a 50-50 chance at a top three pick. I think a little bit better than a 50-50 chance at a top three pick in the lottery. And then they also have the Nets pick, which currently is number 16. They have their own pick, third in the second round. Do the Wolves package picks move up package picks for a veteran player? How do they play their cap space this summer to try and surround Towns and Russell with talent? There's a lot of question marks upcoming, and I think we could probably do a big what if this fall on the offseason, or I guess maybe this winter, depending on when the actual offseason happens, just because there's so many question marks headed into the offseason. Yes, the Wolves have their two stars in Towns and Russell, and maybe have their third in Beasley, but how will the rest of the offseason play out with the draft picks, and how much money will the Wolves have to pony up to keep Beasley and Hernan Gomez potentially? All right, that wraps up the what if series. We covered, I would say, a couple dozen what ifs throughout Timberwolves history, basically from 95 on. If you missed a couple of the episodes, go back and check them out because it was a lot of fun talking about, what does this butterfly effect look like if something would have happened differently throughout history with the Timberwolves franchise. And there were plenty to talk about, to be sure. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Wolves. A final special thanks to our friends at Built Bar for bringing us today's episode. Visit BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON to get $10 off your first order. Now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On NBA. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.